Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 621. It's the 26th of October, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Faisal Rakhmatalla, chairman of Plastics Capital. Ticker PLA talks about their trading update and how the weak pound is a bonus for their business. Plus, stock market small cap commentator Doc Holliday talks about New World Oil and Gas, the issues there at the moment, and Oxford Pharma Science, a very popular company at the moment. I'll tell you why. It does feature in the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. I'll read that list out in a bit. Plus, the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning. I'll cover those. And today's suggested one for your watch list is Oxford Pharma Science Group, OXP. I don't hold any stock here, but it's almost as if this company sponsors the podcast at the moment. So OXP, and that's submitted by AFSAL, and I'll read out the reasons why AFSAL reckons you should put this company on your watch list in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Faisal Rakhmatalla, chairman of Plastics Capital, ticker PLA. Faisal, thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure.
Now, we've not spoken before, and I know a bit about the company because I've just been reading a bit of background. For people like me who would like to be sort of more learned about the company, could you explain what Plastics Capital is all about, please?
Yeah. Plastics Capital is a niche manufacturer of specialist technical plastic products. We make a wide variety of different products out of plastic. They go into a lot of different applications. All of them, however, are highly specialist and to some extent proprietary. So at one end of the scale, we make packaging products for the food manufacturing and distribution supply chain, various types of films, sacks, pouches, and such like. And at the other end of the scale, we make components and control knobs, steering columns, things like that for the automotive industry, and consumables used in the manufacture of cardboard boxes and hydraulic rubber hoses. So very wide range of different products. The thing that links them all together is that it's highly technical, highly specialist, and we're generally using our own proprietary technology.
Yeah, and so your customers, your customer base, I mean, are they based in the UK or they're European or they're worldwide?
Well, we have, roughly speaking, about 60%, 55, 60% of our sales in the UK, and the rest overseas. We operate through two divisions, one of which is the manufacturing packaging products. That is mainly UK-based. And then the other division is, we call it the industrial division, that is substantially exporting from the UK or using some factories that we have in the Far East to sell products all around the world. So it's a very international business. We actually have sales in over 100 countries around the world.
Wow. So how long have you been going then, Faisal?
Well, we formed the business in 2003, 2004. We listed the business at the end of 2007, and we've been building it mainly by acquisition, but also organically over those years. So, we've been going essentially 10 to 12 years.
Yeah, and I've got to ask you, obviously with customers, based now outside the UK, how has this the EU vote affected you? Is it an adverse effect on you?
It's been brilliant.
It's been
It's been brilliant because we are substantially either UK exporters or for our products sold in the UK, we do tend to have quite a lot of competition from European manufacturers, non-UK European manufacturers. So. It's the Brexit vote has been a really good story. It's made us much more competitive. You won't see it in this year's numbers as much as we will see in future years because we tend to hedge our foreign currency exposure 12 to 24 months ahead. Mm. So the foreign currency situation for the current year reflects what was the case before the Brexit vote. But if you look forward a year or two, then it's good news for us.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so on the 20th of September, you release a trading update. Can you take us through some of the points of that, please, Faisal?
Yes, I think we were essentially saying that things are on track. Our industrial division, which is mainly exporting product, is really is doing very nicely. Our largest division, we make plastic bearings, is benefiting from the weakening of the currency and benefiting from various projects that are now coming through into production. We work on long-term projects for our customers, doing lots of design work, and then it moves into manufacturing phase, which is when we actually start to see sales picking up, and we are going into one of those phases at the moment in that business, which is very encouraging. And so industrial division doing very nicely. The films division also doing well. The situation there is one where we're installing and investing in new equipment to expand capacity. We've recently completed an acquisition that was a business we acquired called Simpac in the end of July this year. That's bedding down very nicely and delivering what we expected. So all in all, you know, a healthy situation, trading more or less as we expected, and, you know, sales and organic growth coming through quite nicely.
Yeah, and just your position on the currency, on sterling at the moment. I mean, obviously now it's at an all-time low. I mean, do you plan for that to get stronger, the currency, against, you know, other currencies?
Well, do we plan? We plan in the sense that we hedge our exposure. So we're always trying. We're taking out the risk over 12 to 24 months of what's going to happen to the currency. That means sometimes we don't do as well as we might otherwise. So, for example, this year we're not going to do as well as we might otherwise if we've been unhedged. But we will probably, if sterling does strengthen, and you're a brave person to say that, but if sterling does strengthen, we will, we will be the right side of that in the following financial year and the year after. You know, what should one do as a long-term plan in terms of thinking about sterling relative to, say, the euro or the dollar? Very difficult to say. I mean, we tend to think about a sort of equilibrium rate against the dollar of around 150. That's when we're doing our long-term 5-year, 10-year strategic plans. But, you know, that's a hell of a guess. And I'm not going to be saying what we think is going to happen to sterling over the longer run. We will track it and do our best to optimize our profitability against it.
Exactly. I mean, listen, obviously you're not a currency trader, so it's not. And you're right. I'm probably the first to say that, because for the mid to sort of or short to mid term, I mean, I don't think anyone can see the sterling strengthening for a long time yet. Mm. So it's going to be good for your business anyway. And sort of as far as your factories, you mentioned there you've got some in the Middle East. So where are they based, and how many factories do you have?
So we've got six factories in the UK. And they're all over the country. The furthest south is in Poole, and then we've got two factories in the Midlands, and three factories up north, two in Yorkshire, one in Lancashire. Overseas, we have a factory in Thailand, a factory in sort of outside Beijing, between say an hour and a half outside Beijing. And we have a small factory not too far from Shanghai.
Okay. And do your customers tend to be, recurring customers, or do you get a mix of one-offs?
Very, very much recurring business. Depending on the different products we produce, we have some parts of our business where we're supplying, blue chip multinationals, people that names that you would recognize, like Siemens and Bosch, for example. And at the other end of scale, we're supplying relatively small entrepreneurial businesses, who could be located in all sorts of different funny parts of the world. So again, a wide spread of customers, but without doubt, a lot of recurring business. I mean, we tend to see, you know, retention rates of 95% or so. That means the average customer we're keeping for 20 years. Now, that's great in terms of sustainability of the business and maintaining business. It does tend to make winning new business quite hard work because, you know, their customers are then going to stay with us a long time. But once we do win new business, it tends to stay with us. And we're fortunate's the wrong word, but we've been working hard over the last 5 years in terms of building the pipeline, and we're starting to see that come through.
Yeah. Well, I've got to say, you're one of those rare commodities at the moment where, you know, you are a company on AIM, you know, that have good revenue, profitable, and pay a dividend. And you don't see that very often on AIM, you know? And that's a good thing, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, AIM are normally, you know, a lot of the companies I talk to, they're either exploration companies, they have no revenue, they definitely wouldn't pay a dividend. So it's nice to see, it's a return there for investors. So, listen, it sounds like you're going all good there, especially with the sterling weakness. So if anyone needed any more reason to follow your story, Faisal, could you give us three reasons why someone should hit the follow button on the Vox Markets website next to your company's name, please?
Well, I think people are investing to make a return, and I genuinely believe our share price is significantly undervaluing the value in the business. I say that because the last 5 to 10 years have demonstrated that we are a very resilient company. No matter what the world has thrown at us, we've produced cash and we've been paying these dividends, as you say. But we're now also, to sort of layer on top of that, we're now also into a situation where we're generating significant top-line growth. People will start to see that over the next few years. And that means that not only is your downside protected, but, you know, there is real upside in the share price. And that's even without the currency issue. But the currency issue is just going to play to our strength as well. So, follow the stock because it's undervalued. Get to understand it, and in due course, I'm sure you'll follow more. And you know, if you're potentially a buyer, our shares are really worth picking up now.
Yeah, but do you ever look at the chart of the share price of your company?
Well, yes, I suppose inevitably one does. I wouldn't say I follow the share price terribly closely, actually. I couldn't tell you what it is today, but I'm certainly aware of what I think the value of the business is, and we have been a long way away from that for the last 3 to 6 months. So. That's about as smart as I can be about exactly what our share price is at the moment.
I'll tell you, it's 112. Your market cap of 40 million, but it looks good. I mean, I look at charts a lot, and there's people, as you probably know, that just their job is to look at chart, technical analysts, and essentially you're a rising trend there, which looks quite good. You're above the 200-day moving average, which seems like it's a start of a nice run here. So hopefully, fingers crossed. Well, listen, Faisal, it's been nice to chat to you, and hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now, small cap commentator, authority, blogger, writer, podcaster, it's Doc Holliday. You all right, Doc?
All round hero to everybody as well.
yeah, especially the family there. Okay, listen, what are we chatting about today, Doc? What are you looking at? What's caught your eye? What's tickled your fancy?
Well, look, there's a couple of things worth mentioning today. I think that the main one is, you know, let's talk about companies that are popular, that people are also showing an interest in, and then that gives us at least, a couple of people that are going to tune into this, if nothing else. But I kind of figure that it'd be worthwhile touching on the announcement by New World, or just by the virtue that we've discussed those as a company over the last year or so. So just, for that purpose, I think it's worth touching on that. And just generally, the market, where we are towards the end of October, and perhaps what we can expect for November, really.
Yeah, well, new. What a mess. What a mess that is now is getting into, isn't it? So they announced that Big Sofa pulled out due to some kind of irregularity financially from previous directors, I think it was, wasn't it? And then the brokers at Nomad has stepped down or resigned. What else is happening? Anything else?
Well, look, I think the primary point to focus on is the fact that Roland Cornish of Beaumont Cornish decides to walk. This is a guy that supported some very questionable companies within the market over the last few years, that's for certain. You look back at the previous regimes, the Bill Kelleher's, the Sticks, you know, the various board members that have been involved in all sorts of shady business, fake sheikhs being paid $1 million, deposits paid on yachts with shareholder money for executive directors. You know, there's been such a sort of car crash of a history behind New World Oil, and it seemed to have turned that corner finally after the debacle of a certain individual buying half the company unknowingly last year and all of the drama around that, to Nick Lee and Adam Reynolds going in there, tidying things up, looking to introduce the Big Sofa deal, and that was pretty much ready to come to market at any point in time until one individual or two decided that they were going to challenge the board. I understand the purpose behind that challenge. The individual felt that there were questions that needed to be answered, and had asked them and perhaps hadn't been satisfied with the response they'd got, and had such pushed it so far that it's got to a point where the Nomad now believes that, that these questions and that these issues are just too big for them to want to manage. Again, I find it quite odd, to say the least, that the Nomad would stand by this company, represent them as advisors when fake sheikhs are being paid, when deposits on boats are being paid, when there's all sorts of convoluted nonsense that had been going on by, like I say, you know, an ex-board, which looked extremely shady. You now get two guys in with good reputations, been making money for shareholders in the market, or particularly Adam has, given the last couple of deals he's done with Concepta, with Optibiotics, etc., etc. For them to walk away now because some legacy issues stand, I just find it to be pretty poor, really, I think. There's a definite need, and always will be, for people to get to the bottom of what's been going on with companies. But you're talking about a legacy board with legacy issues, none of which attributed to the new management team, to my knowledge anyway. So I think it's pretty bad. I think that it's now left investors reeling, because, you know, this company will, unless they wave the magic wand, it'll be delisted on the 10th of November. And, you know, I own some stock in the company. I'll probably be able to write that off as a loss against capital gains. But there's going to be people out there that just don't have that, you know, that privilege. And you know, the sad thing is there's people who invested in this as an oil company when Kelleher, when Stick were on the board, you know, feeding the sort of bullshit into the marketplace, and genuinely will be at a total loss and be ruined on the back of this. So I just hope that that individual that's sought to get to the bottom and get the truth understands that whilst he owns a very small and insignificant amount of shares in the company, has just about managed to derail what looked to be a pretty good deal, and one which I believe will go on. I had a word with Adam. I sent an email to Adam and Nick. I wasn't particularly happy, I must say. And I did get a response. It was quite a brief one. We had a quick chat. He seems quite motivated and determined to get something out of this for shareholders, should it go into a private company or not. Ultimately, whilst I share his enthusiasm, I also have a level of scepticism. Been involved with companies that delist. Often they don't make their way back to market. I've no idea whether investors will get any money back from this. Pretty disappointing outcome, as I say. Exports, legacy issues, claims of fraudulent activities. It's reared its ugly little head, and it's gone and jumped the new board, and it's cause for concern for the Nomad, and and off he goes. I think the week is pissed, to be honest, but there you go.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very positive, does it, at the moment, anyway? So let's
talk. Well, the positives to take from it is that, you know, I had a quick word, as I say, I put an email into the two directors that are into the company. You know, I had a quick chat, and I believe that from that very, very brief chat, that they're highly motivated to try to keep this vehicle, whether it be listed or unlisted, on track and do something with that investment which they'd already committed to with Big Sofa, and potentially do something else. I think that the guys think that they can, you know, return value to shareholders, whether it be listed or unlisted. They were extremely sort of energetic, enthusiastic, and it's they seem extremely motivated to get a decent result, because I think they feel a little bit like they've been let down from a number of different parties. You've got to remember that the guys that are running this company today are not the same people that caused this mess. They were just literally appointed to try to stay the company back on track. It appeared to be the case for a period of time. That doesn't appear to be the case today. Let's move on.
Okay, yeah, let's move on to something a bit more positive. Are you looking at a stock that you think has potential, Liz Doc?
Well, yeah, look, it's popular. There's a lot of people just starting to show an interest. It was flagged up. I saw people chatting about this one a couple of days ago, and I felt that it was worth a further look. So, you know, I tapped into Oxford Pharma Science, had a look at what was going on there. The company had an almighty fall from about 10 and 12 pence down to 2p. I looked quickly at the balance sheet that appears at the last set of results to be £22.1 million in cash. The company had a market cap of £24 million. I think it's £25 million today, or £26 million. So the company's got a decent cash position. They've got some drugs and pipelines that they're looking to develop. They want to get these over-the-counter type drugs to market. They believe that they've got the science to do so. We know from previous conversations and other companies in a similar space that should they get this, you know, their product to even halfway there, there's a lot of money and funding that are in place for these type of things. The company raised quite a significant amount of cash at a huge premium. I think it was about 10 pence they raised money at. You know, the Neil Woodford of the Woodford's Fund came on board, and there were a number of other people that also came in and supported the company. If you look at the state of affairs for Oxford Pharma Science, you know, they've got a great shareholder register, and I just think that it's been bombed out, unloved, and it's starting to sort of see a little bit of interest. And naturally, people are starting to now share that enthusiasm,
yeah,
both socially and otherwise.
Well, I can tell it's got a bit of interest. I've had two submissions for that company on our feature, you know, one for your watch list today. So I'm going to feature one of them. So yes, I've seen it bandied about as well. I did look into it. And there's a nice little, video, isn't it? You can look at it as well, from the guy, the main guy. Is it Marco, I think?
Marcelo, I think his
Marcelo,
name is.
Marcelo.
I think that short interview that he's done, it's about 4 minutes long. It's certainly worth watching. I mean, the guy talks about how he believes either Q4, Q1, that the company are going to really start to get a deal completed. I think what's happened between sort of them raising money now is that there's been a bit of a delay on being able to... I think the partner or whoever they're looking to validate their product with has sort of suggested, we need just a little bit more evidence. We'd like you to get to the next milestone before we look to complete on a deal. He believes that's going to happen. I think you can watch that video and listen for yourself and make a decision based on that. But absolutely, I think this company reminds me a little bit of Verona Pharma. It was a company picked up about a year ago. Verona Pharma went on from about 2p, 1.5p to 3.5, 4p. Great little company. It was a similar type of story. We've seen companies like this before. You know, you go and look at the likes of Coovs. They raised quite a substantial amount of cash, and had actually got a commitment to raise a substantial amount of cash at a much higher price. Again, similar type of story, completely different sector, of course, but the synergies are there. You know, there's been a number of institutions who've taken significant amounts of stock at 3, 4, 5 times higher the share price today. I think at some point they're going to expect the a bit of a return and a bang for the buck, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Marvis says, OXP, cheers, Doc. Speak soon, fella.
Thank you, mate.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are at number 5, Alba Minerals, ALBA. At 4, Highland Natural Resources, HNR. At 3, 88 Energy, that's 88E. At 2, Doc mentioned them, and they're also, this today, suggested one for your watch list, Oxford Pharmascience, OXP. And at number 1, no surprise, really, it's always there, more often than not, pretty much at the moment. But it is CloudTag, CTAG. Of course, had the chat with its CEO yesterday, Amit Ben-Ahim, answering private investor questions. A very popular podcast that was. All right, the top 5 most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning was at 5, Milestone Group, MSG, Extension of Independent Sales Organization Agreement. At 4, Highland Natural Resources, executes refracking agreement for DT Ultravert. At 3, Physiomics, presentation at conference on pharmacometrics. Whatever that is. Or pharmacometrics. Yep, I don't know what that is. But it's got a couple of likes there. More than a couple of likes to get in the top 5, to be honest. At 2, Buckley Hanichia, September 2016 quarterly report. I did like that myself. I read that. And at number 1, Sylvania Platinum, SLP, first quarter report to the 30th of September 2016. Some decent figures there. I was reading through them. Pretty much all the figures were looking pretty decent. I didn't look in depth, but the top line, the headlines were very good. Okay, it's time for today's suggested one for your watch list. It is Oxford Pharmascience Group, OXP, like Doc mentioned them earlier. And they're in the top 5 most followed as well. So, Afsal has submitted this. Thank you, Afsal. And it's a lot of good research here. What does the company do? Oxford Pharmascience is a drug development company that redevelops approved drugs using proprietary formulation technologies to make them better, safer, and easier to take. How many shares does the company have in issue? 1.2 billion. What's the current price and market cap? Share price at the moment is 2.25 pence, market cap 27 million. What revenue and profit or loss does the company generate? For the 6 months to the 30th of June 2016, revenue was 370k and loss was 959k. How much cash and debt does the company have? 22.1 million pounds in cash, no debt. There's 3 reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. I've got to warn you, it's more than 3 points here. So strap in. Here we go. Number 1, strong board of directors includes Marcelo Bravo, founder of Oxford Pharmascience, an entrepreneur. Marcelo spent 16 years in R&D with Procter & Gamble Company and subsequently 3 years in corporate development at Boots. Oxford Pharmascience is fully funded with $22.1 million from strong institutional investors. 80% of the company's shares are held by long-term institutional investors and directors at a much higher price of 10 pence with the last placing laws. And the above includes 33% held by Neil Woodford, major pharmaceutical investor. Directors also holding about 30% between them. Next point. Substantive progress in commercialization discussions regarding the company's lead ANSAID assets and OxP0. That's ibuprofen and OxP0 naproxen. I do apologise for the pronunciations there. I'm not sure if I'm on form this, on point. Next point. Feedback has identified the key precursors to successful partnerships outcomes, including additional platform development clarity on a regulatory pathway for over-the-counter and prescription product approval. Next point. Significant progress advancing the OXP0 technology platform. Improvement of drug release in vitro, scale-up and optimization of the manufacturing process. Strengthening of intellectual property portfolio. Next point. Planning to conduct small-scale exploratory pharmacokinetic trials to validate the in vitro performance of formulation improvements, with details to be announced very soon. Next point, ongoing dialogue, including the initiation of broader outreach to include a prescription market. Next point, proceeding to seek pre-IND meetings with US FDA to clarify US regulatory pathway. Next point, license per product would mean £20 to £30 million upfront payment, further sales milestone payments, and mid-teen royalty payments, and Gastrosafe NSAID's potential sales of over £500 million. And Marcelo Bravo, the CEO, commented, "We are very encouraged with the strong traction we're getting from some of the major potential partners in our discussions, and we are also continuing to progress our other pipeline opportunities, including aspirin and statins. Ibuprofen is currently the dominant NSAID molecule in the pain relief and anti-inflammatory sector, with worldwide sales of ibuprofen in excess of $5 billion per annum. The company has initiated contact with a number of large global pharmaceutical companies with strategic interests in the ibuprofen market and is at an advanced stage of preparing information to proceed to the commercialization phase with the OXP0 ibuprofen asset." So, that is OXP, Oxford Pharmascience there. Thank you, Afsel, for submitting that, and please do your own research. You know, everything on this podcast is just an investment idea. Some ideas work, some ideas don't, so please do your own research. And if you know of a company that you think you should put on your on a watch list, if you think everyone else should put on a watch list, please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, see one of my blog posts there, and click the link and fill the form. I do apologise today. I'm stumbling over all my words, and essentially I'm replicating the problems I've had with my Mac. Whatever you do, don't update your Mac. If you rely on something like I do on a daily basis, recording software, and you update your Mac and find it's no longer works or compatible, it's a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. So I spend, you know, half an hour getting stressed, looking at YouTube videos of how to work this thing, a new bit of software. So anyway, it's lucky, you know, I don't know if it's lucky or not, it's lucky you hear me at all, you know, maybe unfortunately you hear me, but this has been brought to you by a lot of stress, a lot of Googling, and a lot of YouTube watching this podcast. So thanks very much for listening, muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.